Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my people. What is up? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. I am hoping that you find yourself at peace and happy as you listen, but it's really possible that you find yourself totally wound up, and that is also really fine. I myself am slightly wound up at the moment. And so I'm trying to practice what I preach. I just got a text from my daughter in college saying, "It was a hard day yesterday. Can I call you when my class is over?" Which is an hour and a half. And I feel my heart beating. I feel my physical anxiety inviting me to be really scared and worried. And so I'm practicing all my tools, and we're going to talk about that today. So hi, I want to throw out a special welcome to my murderinos out there. I know that I am welcoming a huge group of people that were exposed to my work last week when Georgia Hardstark and Karen Kilgariff mentioned my work on My Favorite Murder, which was super fun to be hearing from so many of you guys and getting the reviews on the podcast, hearing that Georgia sent you. And it's really awesome because my wife, Tiffany, has been a huge fan of the podcast since its inception. I mean, she was talking about My Favorite Murder however many years it's been around since it started, before anyone was talking about it. I don't remember how she discovered it, but it's a huge part of our household. We've got the gear, we have the shirts, we have the mugs. She saw them live in Philly, and she's a major fan cult member. So I'm very well aware of the podcast, have listened to it a few times myself. The only reason I hadn't more regularly is I'm kind of like a scaredy cat when it comes to murder. Kind of get like a little bit freaked out by it, but you know, she's kind of wearing me down where I'm not so bad about it anymore. You gotta always wonder, what was I in a past life? I think Tiffany was definitely either a detective or an investigator of some sort, because she's just so into it. True crime in all ways and fashions and forms. So anyway, welcome, murderinos. I am so glad you're here. It's the perfect community to meld with mine. And here we are. So let me see. Is there anything I have to tell you before we talk about my favorite, least favorite, most favorite topic, anxiety and lack of control? Jesus, it's so hard to not have control in our lives, which of course we don't at all. Sorry, but we don't. Let me see. Okay, so if you are new to my work and you have a lot of questions or one question or anywhere in between, just go over to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, click on the resources tab, and everything I do is listed there. Follow me on Instagram at Nicole Sachs LCSW. Remember that Nicole does not have an H in it. A lot of people say N-I-C-H, and I'm like, nope, N-I-C-O-L-E. And definitely check out all the episodes of this podcast and my YouTube channel, The Cure for Chronic Pain, and my Facebook group, Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs, LCSW, and my book, The Meaning of Truth, available on Amazon. So, and other things too. I can't even remember. But go check it out, because you deserve complete freedom. Complete freedom. You deserve the whole buffet, not just crawling under the table getting the scraps. You deserve it all, and you can have it all. You have the power to heal yourself. It is hard. It is hard work. It is not for the faint of heart. It's deep work, but you have the power to do it. And I'm here for all of it, and I'm here to help you. So check out that information. I did recently, right after my second online retreat, did so well in terms of just people really feeling like they came out of the weekend transformed and awake and aware and ready to take on this work. I did check with my Omega instructors, and we have added a third date, May 7th through the 9th, and that can all be, all the information is on the retreats tab of my website. So check it out if you want to join us all virtual for that one. And then, of course, hopefully next summer we'll be able to put some more in-person dates on the calendar. All right. All right. All right. Let's talk about anxiety. I have so much to say on the topic that I just need to sort of breathe and sink into myself so I can say it all. So we're going to see where this goes. So the first thing I want to say about anxiety is a multifaceted organism. It is not just physical anxiety, like racing heart, dry mouth, trouble getting a deep breath, trouble swallowing, stomach issues. It's not just physical anxiety, although it is often physical anxiety and certainly is often for me. It's also mental anxiety, like ruminating when you just have the same thought over and over, worrying about it, picking it apart, dissecting it, trying to figure out the best way to handle it. It involves insomnia because you can have that ruminating kind of thought process at night, of course, also paired with the beating heart and the shortness of breath. Oh my goodness, it's so encompassing. No wonder so many of us have such tremendous issues with anxiety. And also, not for nothing, it's also expressing itself in many other ways through your body. As you know, if you're familiar with my work, we live in a mind-body system. Sometimes you feel things in your heart, and sometimes you feel things in your body. And when I say your heart, what I really mean by that is anything that is felt, anything that is thinky or painful in terms of heartache, heartbreak, when you love somebody so much that it makes you feel like vulnerable and unsafe, that's heart. And then in your body, of course, is stomach issues, headaches, fibromyalgia, back, neck, shoulder, knee, elbow, foot, etc., hip pain. Any skin disorders would be in your body. Pelvic pain of all varieties would be in your body. So there's many ways to experience anxiety. Anxiety is an overused term, I think, sort of like stress is an overused term. And the only reason it's overused, it's not because it's not as real as saying fear or shame. It's just that it's so amorphous. It's so vague. That sometimes people have a hard time pulling it apart, unpacking it, and figuring out what they have to attend to in order to feel better. So we're going to start with sort of the basic, most high-level coping / relieving methods for anxiety, how it has to do with control, and we'll kind of break it down from there. So the first thing I want to say about lack of control is we don't have control at all, ever. The only kind of control we have is fake control. Now, that is not to say that fake control is not warranted and is not helpful. So here's what fake control is. Cleaning your house, deciding what you eat, being somewhere on time, planning well for your family. So those are some really good examples. As you noticed, none of those things are unhealthy, unless they cross the Rubicon into being unhealthy. So of course, when we pathologize our need for control, we get things like OCD and eating disorders and panic disorders when we're not on time or somewhere where we need to be. So the idea, and of course the goal, is to not overuse our fake control mechanisms in order to try to quell anxiety that is just there to help us pay attention to ourselves. So I don't want to have a negative connotation to those activities. So let me explain it a little more when I say fake control. The reason I mean fake control is you got to look at the root cause of why you are struggling. So if my root cause of why I am struggling is that my daughter is having a tough time in her freshman COVID year of college, so that's the real reason I'm struggling. I'm worried about her and I'm scared. Now, of course, I can't let that consume me all day. So what might I do? I might say, you know what? I think I'd feel better if the house was clean. And I would feel better if the house is clean. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think that's really healthy. So now I start cleaning the house. And I feel a little better, but I don't feel completely better, right? Because my problem is not that I have a dirty house. My problem is that there's something I can't control out there, which is the way my child, who I love more than life, is going to experience adversity and pain and heartache. I can't control that. I will never be able to control that. Now, cleaning my house can feel like I'm in control for the moment. I am the person with my hands and arms making a bed. You know, I can make it look nice. I can organize. I can redo my drawers. It's healthy. But when I go to the extreme, and I don't usually do this, but when one goes to the extreme of, let's say, compulsively cleaning the house and then making the house itself the problem. This is why I say fake control, because that's not the problem. And so if indeed a person is going to feel incredibly unsettled and unhappy and maybe, you know, arguing with others, you know, snapping at others because, you know, the house is not perfect and why did you leave that there? And, you know, give me a second. I told you I needed to clean the kitchen before we leave, you know, things like that. That is because we are so bereft. We are so in despair over the things that we really can't control. We are going to ultra control something like cleaning the house, and it's not helping. It's just not helping. Same thing with food. You know, eating disorders are fake control. We want to have control over something. That's why it's the most common mental health issue for children. Is problems with eating, whether overeating, undereating, you know, compulsive exercise, you know, in terms of body image. It's such a big problem because what else can kids possibly perceive they have control over? I mean, nothing. They can't even lock their door if they want to, or be on their phone when they want to, or sleep in, or, you know, I mean, this is being a child. You're told, go to school, you know, unlock your door, give me your phone. Everything you own belongs to me because I paid for it, kind of thing. And you know what? Listen, I'm a parent. I've been a kid and I'm a parent. I understand both sides of that equation. But when we use these at hand, unhelpful, when they're pathologized, control methods, we only hurt ourselves. So if I'm going to worry about Isabella at college, and then instead of allowing myself to be fully and utterly present in whatever painful feelings I have there, I'm going to restrict my eating and keep a very strict food journal and make sure that I only consume a certain amount of calories and then beat myself up terribly if I go over. And if I don't exercise, I'm going to feel like a failure. And what's really interesting about the human psyche, this whole mind-body system, is if we really allow ourselves to pathologize these fake control behaviors, we actually, in terms of our mind-body system, feel more balanced. It's the same reason why back pain is safer than feeling our repressed emotions, because the mind-body system just wants to feel like the boat isn't rocking so hard. And trying to deal with our acute anxiety over things we can't control, or trying to deal with, you know, going back and really understanding our repressed emotions, our experiences from childhood, our coping strategies and abilities for the day-to-day, and our ability to deal with our personality, which can sometimes trigger us in a million different ways. Those endeavors are perceived by our brain and our nervous system as so much more dangerous than just, you know, have an eating disorder, just have back pain, you know. And I know that you're not creating your eating disorder or your back pain. It is a natural process by which our body seeks to protect us from that which feels too dangerous, stuff we can't control and stuff that feels too dangerous to feel. My work essentially is helping people pause, because we must begin with pause. Pause, breathe, be ready, be willing to do what needs to be done, And then, in that pause and readiness and willingness, turn toward what we need to turn toward. And today we're talking about our anxiety. Open the door gently, but boldly, with our feet planted on the ground and our chests out and our eyes open, and say, I'm here for this. We can go into our darkest rooms and turn on the light. And we can do that with our anxiety. So, the first danger is to overwhelm ourselves, over cope, over try to control in these false controlling behaviors, and realize that that's what you're doing. So you might not be able to stop them right away, but like I said, pause and awareness are first. So I'll speak for myself. One thing that I try to do is I try to make a punch list, like a to-do list, and get it done. And like I said, very healthy, you know, on the surface. And so I might do that, and I might have a certain amount of things on the list. I want to get done around the house. I want to get done, you know, in terms of errands, you know, get the car serviced and blah, 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 you know, left and right. What I find when I am anxious about things, about situations I can't control, is I may be overly committed to getting everything done and feel a tremendous sense of shame, let's say at the end of a day or a week. And I'm like, man, I keep saying I'm going to do that. And then shame can take many levels, because first you could shame yourself for not doing it. But second and third and fourth and a millionth, you can shame yourself. Well, what kind of person are you because you didn't? You know, if it's something I need to do for the kids, like a doctor's appointment or follow up with something or pick up a school uniform or make sure they have what they need for dance class or whatever, and I didn't do it, it becomes, what kind of a parent are you? How irresponsible? Do you want to make them feel abandoned? Oh my goodness, they're going to be in therapy for the rest of their life talking about how you didn't get the leotard, you know? Oh dear Lord, what we can do to ourselves. And listen, I'm being a bit hyperbolic. I don't go to the ends of the earth with myself. Certainly, certainly not anymore the way I have done in the past. Because, you know, growing and changing, hashtag growing and changing. But the thing is, like, when we're doing that and when we are giving so much energy to these false controlling behaviors, if you don't watch it, it will take you down a shame spiral to the point where you don't even remember where the core problem was. You can even numb yourself to the core problem. And actually, when you numb yourself to the core problem, one of the side effects of that, and it's a harmful side effect, is you can appear cold and unwilling to the person who needs you. So for example, I mean, we're using this example. I don't know what I'm going to find out in an hour. But if indeed I am so stressed out about Isabella's college experience that I over control all these little things in my life, I fail at it because it's impossible to ever succeed at all of it, shame myself, become horrified with how, what kind of person I am. I'm so deep into that. And by the way, guys, it's so self-centered. And I know, because I have been there so many times where it's so self-centered. I'll come back to that. That I will distance myself. Maybe I'll just say, I'm just not going to call her today. It's too painful to hear about what's going on with her. I'm not involving myself. I have to get that one more errand done. I got to clean the house. I got to make sure that my food is whatever. You know, guys, here's the thing. First of all, can we like really deeply and ultimately forgive ourselves for doing this stuff? Because goddamn, this is human. It is so hard. We are such deep feeling beings, human beings. We have such a complicated perspective of the vicissitudes of life, our births, our deaths, our pain, our struggle. We're empathic. We project our own pain onto others and we take others' pain on as our own. And so it is hard to open ourselves to turn in that way toward our anxiety and our feelings and say, I'm here for this. We would so much rather be here for other things. And after all, some of these coping skills, some of these behaviors that can lead to pathology, they feel good in the moment. You know, if your addiction is to sugar, it kind of feels good while you're eating that candy or that donut or that muffin or even those chips or whatever. You know, if you're if your addiction is something that is going to make you feel good in the minute, sometimes it's just like, I just need to feel good right now. And that's fine, as long as it's not owning you. We all can take our moments of taking a pause from our feelings. God knows there are times, there are days where I have some sort of a physical symptom whispering through me. I never get chronic pain. The reason I never get chronic pain is because chronic pain is an epidemic of fear. So if I'm not, nothing about my physical body scares me anymore. So I could never get chronic pain, but I'll get whispers of things that'll flow through me. And so let's say I have, you know, I wake up and in the first, you know, few hours of the day, I get a headache or something like that. There are many, many days where I'm like, okay, I don't want this headache. So let me go to the emotional mat with myself in whatever way. I do my journal speak. I do my meditation. I can do my verbal journal speak. It operates in the background like a second language. If this is, if all this stuff is new to you, just, you know, there's so many, go to my resources, go listen to this podcast from episode one. You'll understand what I'm talking about. On some days I'm up for that. And guys, honestly, on some days I take the headache. I'm like, I'll take it. I am not doing the work today. I am too tired. I am too stressed. There's too much to feel. I'll pop two Advil and get back to you tomorrow there. Most of the time it goes away anyway, just with that level of acceptance and indifference toward it. But I guess what I'm saying is anxiety can be very challenging because when it presents itself to us, we actually really feel afraid. And when you really feel afraid, there are cognitive behavioral in the moment techniques that can really help. And what I like to do when I help you is I like to take those cognitive behavioral techniques and I like to pair them with the philosophy behind what I'm saying here today. So the first cognitive behavioral technique I want to talk about when you're feeling tremendous anxiety. Okay, so already remember you have acknowledged that you know your anxiety has a core root, has a center. And you've done your best, even though you can't always get there, to be like, I know what this is really about. Doesn't mean you're going to feel better. Just awareness. So I know my anxiety right now is really about Isabella at college. Okay. So I know that. There we are. Doesn't make me feel better, but I know it. Second thing I can do is practice what I like to call the wave. The wave. Okay. So close your eyes. Don't close your eyes if you're driving. Pretend your eyes are closed. And I want you to picture yourself on a raft. And the raft is solid and it's beautiful. It's smooth. It's all tied together with twine. It's like a wooden raft, but it's beautiful and it's safe and it's sturdy and it's really big. You're right in the middle of it and it's really big. And it is meant for taking on the waves of the ocean, this raft. So here you are sitting right in the middle of your big, solid, beautiful raft, very capable raft. And there are small waves. They're coming and they're going. They're coming and they're going. But you're feeling your anxiety build. You're feeling your anxiety build. The feeling is coming. You feel it coming and you see it coming. And there's a big wave and it's building toward you. And you are so tempted to just lock them up and to close your eyes and to clench your body. And if you do, or if you don't, the wave is coming, right? Think of life as the sea. It's coming in and it's going out, no matter what we think or choose or want. It's coming and it's going. And so it's approaching and it's building and it's large and you see that it's large. And what I want you to do is I want you to know that there are two ways to take this wave. You could clench up and hold yourself all in tight, but there will be side effects to that. And it still won't keep the wave from coming. Or you can feel it coming. Unclench your hands, lay them at your sides, open your eyes, see it coming. Say, I see you. I'm here for this. I love myself. I love this life and I am here for this. Feel it coming. You're scared, but it's okay. Breathe in, out. I'm here for this. And here it comes. Let it rise. You go over it. Let it fall. There it was. Be with it. Let it flow through you like the waves of the ocean. My dear, it is not going to kill you. But if you lock up and you don't let yourself feel free and with your feelings, there will be other problems like stomach issues, like headaches, like panic attacks, stuff we don't want. There is no way out of anxiety because anxiety in itself is a coping mechanism born from your brain and your nervous system seeking to alert you if there is real danger. Anxiety is projective fear, right? So if actual fear is just in the here and now, you know, I see a person raise a gun, I have fear. That's in the here and now. But if I'm anticipating that someone else has a gun around the corner, that's anxiety. It's anticipatory. And if I am constantly worried that around the corner there's going to be a gun and there's never a gun, well, that's a waste of my life, isn't it? So what's most important about dealing with anxiety is being in the here, touching back into the moment. And the best way to do that is to be present with it and allow it to flow through you like a wave. Now, of course, the great side effect of being unclenched and allow that wave to come, because remember, it's coming whether we clench up or not, is that we start to feel less and less afraid of those feelings. Because we're teaching our brain, we're teaching our nervous system, we're rewiring our neural pathways to be aware that I just rode that wave. It looked so big, but my raft is so solid, and I unclenched my hands and I opened my eyes and I felt it up and I felt it down, and look at me, I'm right here, I'm still here. And very important to realize that anxiety and excitement are the exact same physical process in your physical body. This is something I learned last summer when my youngest daughter Charlotte was having issues with anxiety, and we met with her pediatrician because she was really she was suffering. She was really uncomfortable, Charlotte, and she explained to Charlotte that the human body experiences the physical changes that anxiety causes in the exact same way that the human body experiences excitement. And because human beings are so capable of perceiving a situation, the only way the body knows whether you're excited about something or anxious about something is your perception of the situation. So one of the things that can be really interesting to play around with, my second cognitive behavioral tip on anxiety, is first of all, realizing that. Like right now, the way my heart is beating and the way my kind of chest feels and, you know, all these anticipatory feelings of speaking with my daughter, I could also be excited to talk to her. Now, we both know I'm no idiot. I'm not excited to hear that she's miserable and she had a hard day, and I kind of suspect she didn't go to class. That's not fun for me. And we associate excitement with fun. But rather than go down an anxiety spiral, if I just realize that my body is just feeling the same thing it would feel if I was excited, it's not dangerous. It's not any more dangerous than if, you know, she was about to walk in the house in an hour after being at college for, you know, a few months and I was excited to see her with a smile on her face. My body would be exactly the same right now. And so being aware of that, and then one little game that you can play with yourself is when you're feeling really anxious, play with it. Say, what if I was excited about this? Horrible thing. What if I was excited about it? Let me play with that. Let me try that. Let me put a smile on my face just for a second. Just play the game. Because guys, it's not so serious. If we don't panic, our body can get the sense that we're safe, and that actually reduces the anxiety. So that's another really good tip to use in the moment. And here's the way it pairs with my philosophy. So those are cognitive behavioral, those are two examples of cognitive behavioral techniques to deal with anxiety in the moment. And I have a couple more, but those are two good ones. The reason that it really helps if you also pair those with your thinking ability to be present in what's happening is the logic of what I'm saying can really help you enact the behaviors. So the logic of what I'm saying is there are two ways the body, and this is based on brain science and based on the primitive brain and nervous system that have not changed at all since early man and woman, is this. when we have anxiety and we further respond to that anxiety by that clenching, resisting, stopping energy, the anxiety, the brain and the nervous system only have one conclusion to draw, that the danger is not only real, but even realer than was originally perceived, and the anxiety goes up because it's preparing you to flee or to fight for your life or to freeze so still that you don't even need to breathe. That's preparing you. Now, if the perceived situation, if I'm going to allow myself to unclench, open my eyes, ride that wave, if I'm going to look at that fear that I'm feeling and being like, well, what if it were excitement? My body would be feeling the same thing. Let's see. Let's see. I'm excited, doctor. Let's see. Can I breathe? Like, I'm excited. Like, if you do those two things, the reason that it's great pairing it with the mental understanding is you will then realize, as this sentient grown up that you are, that you are helping yourself. It's like you team up with you. You know, you're on your own side. We're doing this. It's so important. So another really, really good thing to realize about anxiety is that there is only a certain amount of time, and I don't give it a time limit. It's not like 20 minutes, but it doesn't matter, that our bodies can sustain that level of fear and panic. It will subside. It's where the concept of this too shall pass comes. And so instead of clenching up, if we want this to pass, we can recognize that and we can turn toward it. You know, this too shall pass has been a really important statement in my life because I have always had this really sort of childlike, almost stubborn notion, like if something's bad, it's always going to be bad. And then, of course, when something is good, I used to think it would always be good. And, you know, that bitch slaps you really quick. So just being with the very natural transitions of life, you know, the tenets of Buddhism, I am the sky and my life is the weather. And if I can be the sky, if my consciousness can be the sky and allow these ups and downs which need to pass, they will. And once you actually don't hold on so tight and don't clench up so tight and don't allow your anxiety to become so chronic that you don't know what it feels like to not be anxious, this too shall pass starts proving itself to you by passing. And as things pass, we get to say, oh, look, you know what? Although this right now never feels like it's going to pass, I do actually remember last week when something did pass, where I thought this was the worst day in the world, and I woke up the next day, and for some reason, I just had a lightness to me, and I said, wow, today's a better day. That happens. Literally true. It happens. And so when you start experiencing that, your responsibility, of course, and this goes with chronic pain recovery, of course, as well, because pain and anxiety, by the way, are interchangeable full on, is that your body becomes your proof. And you're like, okay, well, although it doesn't feel like right now anything will ever be better, I remember last week and 2 weeks prior and the day before that, that things did pass and it did improve and I was okay. And so you have to, that's comforting. That's comforting. I want you to realize when it comes to things that seem really big and daunting. And you've heard this so much as a metaphor in life. When you turn toward them instead of run away from them, they evaporate into the air. They shrink. You know, it's the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. It's not as big as your mind can make it if you just turn to look at it. So let's talk about where journal speak fits into all of this. So one of the best ways to unmask and to bravely look into this dark room is to use your journal speak practice. And the simplest, best way to do it is to, if you're feeling anxious, to set your timer for 20 minutes and to write on the top of your piece of paper or your computer screen, why am I so anxious today? And then you start with the sentence, I am so anxious today because... And for 20 minutes, come hell or high water, come boredom or tears or exhaustion that is so thick you feel like you cannot keep your eyes open, you keep writing. And when your brain goes completely blank and you feel like there's absolutely no content there, you can write, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I'm here. I have nothing to say. This is stupid. This is meaningless. Just keep writing. Because what's amazing about the brain and the nervous system is they are like these beautiful, timid children who are just not sure about you. They think maybe you just need protection. This is why you've had chronic headaches and back pain and fibro and pelvic pain and hip pain and skin troubles and IBS. They are not sure about you and your ability to really feel this stuff. So they really think it would be kind of a little bit easier if you were just anxious all the time and you thought it was because you didn't eat well or clean enough or, you know, whatever your OCD is presenting. Like, they think that's safer. Now, of course, I call that safe in the unsafest way. But when you think about that, what happens with children who are generally sweet in nature and just want to do their best, when you start proving to them that you're going to show up and you're going to hear them, they start releasing it. So when you do your journal speak practice and you sit there for these 20 minutes and just keep writing, no matter what the nervous system throws out, because the nervous system is going to throw out, you're too tired for this, or this is dumb, or you have nothing else to say, or this isn't going to help anyway. What are you going to do this every day for the rest of your life? This is stupid. Stop now. You know, all those things. And that's a child. That's a child who's scared, who's trying to protect you because it's just a little boy. He's got all his armor on. He's got his big sword. And you're going to say, hey, honey, I get it. I hear you. And I'm feeling it, man. I'm feeling the exhaustion. I'm feeling the resistance. I'm feeling the negativity. I'm feeling the frustration. I'm feeling your message is being heard loud and clear. But I'm going to keep doing this now because I know where we need to go. And I have my eye on the horizon and the life we live right now. I don't want it anymore. I want complete freedom. I want to breathe deep. I want to be present with my family and my friends and my work and my possibilities. So thank you for sharing, but I'm going to do this now. And in those 20 minutes of journal speak, you are going to learn things. When you open up to your experience, when you open up those dark rooms and turn on the light, it's scary to walk in, but once you stand there for long enough, you exhale. Your shoulders drop and you go, oh man, yeah, I was kind of worried this was in here. Okay, well, let's open the box then because fuck it. I don't want to live scared anymore. So let's open the damn box. And you open the box. Maybe it hurts, but I just want to say with my hand on my heart, it hurts less than being paralyzed and stuck in your anxiety and your shame and your grief and your fear and your terror and your rage. It feels better to just open the damn box. And so that's what journal speak does for you. And you follow that 20 minutes by a 10-minute loving kindness meditation for yourself. I ask only for 30 minutes of your day. It will help you so much. It will help you so much. And it will really help you do what this anxiety is just begging for you to do, which is turn toward it, unclench your hands, straighten your spine, open your eyes, chest out, and say, I'm here for this. Blow through me. Wave crash over my head. I'll be standing when you're done. I'm here for this. That's what we need. That's what we need to do because the things we can't control will always be the things we can't control. This sweet child that's going to ring my phone soon, you know what? She has a whole life ahead of her. And people are going to hurt her and break her heart, and she's going to break her own heart. And I am not psyched about it. Guys, I'm not freaking psyched about it. Being a parent is so hard. My heart. Oh, but I chose this because in the world of what hurts versus what hurts worse, it hurts less for me to have these babies for me. It hurts less because not having them would hurt so much more for me. Not everybody is the same. But I choose this and I choose it with all the gory blood and guts. There, we got the murderitos. Come on in. I choose it with the blood and the guts because you know what? That is living for me. And I'm not going to push her away because she hurts, because it hurts for me when she hurts. But I will never be able to control her outcomes. And trust me, I have mourned and grieved this and I will never stop because I wish I had control over that and almost everything else. But I don't. And so in knowing that, I can take my anxiety, look it gently, gaze at it gently in the eye and say, I'm here for this. I don't like it. I'm not going to like it, but I'm here. Oh, and the relief once it passes through you, because you know what? We're all right. You and me, we're okay. We're here, right? We're here. 2020, we're here. We're still breathing. So we got this. All right, my friends. Well, this has been so fun spending time with you today. I think it came out okay. Do you? I never have a plan for these podcasts, so I'm hopeful it did. If this podcast is meaning anything to you and you are enjoying it, I do really appreciate if you go over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really helps people find the podcast and know what they're getting into. All right, my loves. Until next week, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.